And I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line now by Father Peter McVerry. Father McVerry was in Kenmare last night in the Carnegie there to give a talk for Lent organised by the Diocese of Kerry. Father Peter, thank you very much for joining us, as everyone would be familiar.
My pleasure.
He is one of Ireland's leading advocates for those who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. First thing, Father McVerry, your reaction to the vote in the Dáil last night. The eviction ban will come to an end.
It will. That's not unexpected. I didn't think that TDs were going to vote for an election with all the hassle that it brings on them, canvassing. So it's not unexpected, but I think it's a real tragedy. There's a huge amount of misery coming down the road. The end of the eviction ban comes at a time when there is virtually no emergency homeless accommodation available anywhere in the country. And in the last 3 months of last year, 4,700 eviction notices were issued. And they're going to come into effect now over the next few months. And I don't know where those people are going to go. There isn't nowhere for them to go to. There is a tide of human misery coming down the road. And already those 4,700 households are panicking. They're in terror at the prospect of becoming homeless. And the vast majority of them have never, ever been homeless before, or never even for a moment thought that they would ever become homeless. So I think it should have been extended, and for maybe 12 months, provided there was a mechanism for landlords for whom this ban would pose significant difficulties, a mechanism whereby they could get an exemption from the ban. But I think it should have been extended for 12 months, and during those 12 months, measures put in place to alleviate and minimise the impact of homelessness on on those who are going to be evicted.
Could I put it to you, though, Father McVerry? I'm thinking of figures in government. I don't think they can be categorised. Figures like Eamon Ryan, the Minister for the Environment, the leader of the Green Party, I don't think figures like him could be categorised as Thatcherite or as economically conservative or obsessed with big business. No. and making things as easy as possible for big business. Figures like that, who do have a social conscience, one would argue, they voted that for the ban to end. And is it a question if the ban was put out to January next year, as Sinn Féin wanted, then the timeline, the deadline would loom, and there'd be further calls to extend the ban?
It would give time for government to put in place some measures to avoid people being evicted going straight into homelessness. In other words, securing more accommodation, renovating derelict buildings which exist in every single town in Ireland, putting in place more modular homes.
Initiatives like that have been introduced by the government, to be fair to them.
But yes, they have been introduced. But there are many local authorities who have not, in the last 12 or 15 months, haven't renovated a single derelict building. Waterford are the best. They have renovated 45 derelict buildings over a period of 18 months. But many local authorities haven't done any derelict buildings. Some have only done one building. The government have ordered 700 modular homes. I'm saying order 7,000. There are measures that could be put in place to alleviate the misery of becoming homeless on people. And the reason it wasn't extended till maybe Christmas or January, government doesn't want a whole pile of homelessness occurring around Christmas time. That's bad politically. They wouldn't extend it for a year till next March, because there's local and European elections coming up shortly after that, and they don't want a wave of evictions coming up in the month or two before an election. So the decision was taken, I think, quite politically to terminate the eviction ban at this stage. so that the impact of it politically will have been minimised by the time the next elections come around.
What about the concessions, though, that have been won by the rural regional, I should say the regional independent group? They're separate to the rural independent group, the regional independent group. They've looked for key demands such as tax relief for small landlords, in the hope that they will stay in the sector and not sell on. You know, they're talks about extending the rent-a-room scheme to those receiving social welfare payments. There are measures being put in place to soften things as much as possible for tenants who are facing an uncertain future.
There are, and they will make a difference, but it'll be a small difference. Landlords are not leaving. I don't believe landlords are leaving the market because they're not making enough money. Rents have gone up by 50% in the past 5 years. And many landlords, over 50%, don't have a mortgage on the property. So it's not a financial. They're not leaving the market because they're not making enough money. I think they're leaving the market because house prices are now near their peak and they want to capitalise on the asset that they have before house prices start to drop.
Is it about greed then, by landlords?
No, I don't call it greedy. Landlords are not there. Their job is not to provide social housing. And that's what they've been asked to do for the last 15 years. Landlords are not there to provide social housing. That's the government's responsibility. But I think, no matter what tax concessions you give, landlords are going to continue to exit the market. I myself have called a number of times for landlords who would reduce the rent for their tenants by 30% would get a 50% reduction in tax on their rental income. And that's a win-win for everybody. Somebody who's paying €1,500 a month rent would then only be paying €1,000, make it much more affordable. And the landlord's tax on the rental income would reduce by 50% and they'd be making money. The loser would be the exchequer, but if we want to keep people in the market, I think that's what we have to do.
And landlords would argue that they have a huge burden. They're saying they're exposed to huge financial risks, rising mortgage interest rates, inflationary cost pressures, burden of taxation, that being a landlord is not a guaranteed gold mine as maybe it might have been portrayed 20 years ago.
Yep. Yeah, and let's not demonise landlords. The vast majority of landlords are very decent people trying to maybe earn a living. And the vast majority of tenants are very decent people who simply want a place to live. There are a small number of landlords who are struggling, maybe struggling financially or for other reasons. And yes, I think there should be a consideration given to helping them. And there are a small number of landlords who I call rogue landlords, who simply are absolutely greedy. All they want is the maximum amount of money for the least amount of work. They don't do renovations on the property. They don't do repairs. They simply take in the money. But the vast, vast majority of landlords are just ordinary, decent people. I know one landlord who has actually reduced the rent for their tenants because they know the tenants can't afford it. And I think that goes for the vast majority of landlords.
And are there rogue tenants?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I will not stand over rogue tenants. If a landlord has a tenant who refuses to pay the rent or a tenant who is engaging in antisocial behaviour, I am not going to support that tenant. Absolutely, I support the landlord. But the ban on evictions was a no-fault ban on evictions. If a tenant wasn't paying the rent or engaging in antisocial behaviour, they could still have been evicted, even during the eviction ban. And I would absolutely support that, of course, yes.
We're speaking to Father Peter MacFerry, arguably one of the country's best-known advocates for those who are homeless and are at risk of homelessness. Father MacFerry, if you were in charge of housing policy, what's the first thing you'd do?
Well, there's a whole lot of things I do. I think the government's policy at the moment is I support much of it. They have committed to increasing social housing stock by 9,000 units a year. And I think that's the direction we have to go in. Over the past 15, 20 years, we've been depending on the private rented sector. For example, in 1975, this country built 8,500 council houses. In 1985, we built 6,900 council houses. And in 2015, this country built 75 council houses. So we stopped building council houses and put the whole burden onto the private landlords to provide accommodation. Now, they've done this U-turn. They commit to building or to providing 9,000 units, social units every year. Absolutely support that. I think it's too little. I'd like to see them doing more. And the pace is too slow. They're way behind their targets in providing social housing. So I think that's a... The other thing is modular units. You could have 7,000 modular units up in place by the end of this year. And the other thing is the empty buildings that I mentioned. In every street, in every town, there are empty boarded up buildings. And many of those, not all, but many of those could be brought back into use if the political will was there. And the other thing is the Airbnbs. There's about 1,000 private rented units available, advertised for rent in this country at the moment. There's 25,500 Airbnbs advertised for rent. And the vast majority of those are not registered as they're required to be. And do not have planning permission where appropriate. I would make it illegal to advertise on an Airbnb platform unless you're registered.
And the government...
Government predicts that would bring 12,000 Airbnbs back into the private rented sector.
But a news just coming through this morning, Father McVerry, the EU has thrown a bit of a spanner into that plan by the government because their plans to free up those additional 12,000 retail properties, rental properties, I should say, that you've been talking about there, have been hit with a blow as the EU last night delayed plans for a new Airbnb register until the end of the year. So that's some breaking news on that. What would you say to anyone who's facing eviction now, who's a tenant, who's worried, who's concerned? What would you say to someone listening in?
I don't have any words of comfort, I'm afraid. I think the prospect ahead of them is very bleak. Those who have been given eviction notices, I'm sure, have been looking for alternative private rented accommodation, and there's so little available, they have not been able to find it. They may have relatives that they can move in with in the short term, but that's often not sustainable because the house becomes overcrowded and relationships can get frayed. I'm afraid they will have to register as homeless with their local authority. And as I say, the local authority will almost, in all likelihood, have nothing to offer them. So I'm afraid it's bleak. I do not have any good news for someone who's facing eviction.
Caller's got in touch, Father McVerry, says... Catholic Church, well, this person says they're the highest number, second highest, they're the highest, second highest number of properties in Ireland. I don't know if that's the case. But anyway, this person goes on to say there are many parish houses unoccupied all over the country, monasteries, convents not being used. Why don't the Catholic Church do more and maybe come up with an arrangement with the state at this time to help house people?
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment. However, in Dublin, the Dublin Diocese has asked Dublin City Council to rezone much of their land for housing, and the Dublin City Council have refused. The Catholic Church does own an awful lot of property, but it's in the form of schools and other institutions serving vulnerable people, so they're not available. I think... Focus Ireland, for example, a lot of their property that they house homeless people in was given to them by their religious congregation, and it was given to them free of charge to use for homeless services. So, and I think there's myself and Sister Stan and Brother Kevin, we're all part of the Catholic Church and we're doing our bits to try and help the problem. So while I would certainly say the Church has to look at what more it can do in terms of particularly the land that's available, where housing could be built, I think while the Church could do more, I don't think we can blame the Church. It's not the Church's job to provide social housing. It's the government's job to provide social housing. I think the Church should play its role, but it is not the ultimate provider of housing.
Well, we'll leave it there. I know you've a train to catch. Father Peter McFerry, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. Safe journey back to Dublin.
Thank you very much. Thank you.